liking another absence, and with each absence, abstinence. No automorphic fluxing with father lover when he's fled, so no plasma orgasmata, ergo proto-matter shortfall. Uh-oh.
Then, April 18th, 1906.
That's specific. What happened in that day?
The great San Francisco earthquake.
In that day, he left. He has not returned. We do not know where he has gone. Cast off. Bewildered. We wait. Missing him?
Abandoned.
I smell a motif.
Well, it occurred to me.
The man that got away? And I think the time has come to let him go.
And then what? And then what?
Last chapter. Anti-migration. Surely you see towards what we are progressing. The fabric of the sky unravels. Angels hover, anxious fingers worry the tattered edge. Before the boiling of blood and the searing of skin comes the secret catastrophe. Before life on Earth becomes finally nearly impossible, it will, for a long time before, have become completely unbearable. You have driven him away! You must stop moving!
Stop moving?
Forsake the open road. Neither mix nor intermarry. Let deep roots grow. Do not mingle. Cease to progress. Seek not to fathom the world and its delicate particle logic. You cannot understand. You can only destroy. You do not advance. You only trample. Hobble yourselves! There is no Zion save where you are. If you cannot find your heart's desire in your own backyard,
you never lost it to begin with.
Pryor is disturbed and confused by the citation. She is confused and disturbed that humans know these lines. For Belize, it's proof, of course, that this is a dream.
Turn back. Undo till he returns again.
Please, please, angel, or whatever you are, I'm not a prophet. I'm a sick, lonely man. I don't understand this visitation. What am I supposed to do with all of this? Do I stand on a street corner and screech at passers-by? What do you want from me? What do you want me to do? Oh, nothing. That's what you want. You want me to not do anything. Stop moving. You want me to die. Answer me. No, I want you to go away. I am tired of being done to, infected, fucked over, and tortured. You go away! Or I will. I can leave, too.
The angel steps aside and gestures to Pryor to leave. He hesitates and starts for the door. As he passes near her, the angel touches him gently on the shoulder.
You can't outrun your occupation, Jonah. Hiding from me one place, you will find me in another.
She takes her hand from his shoulder. Tenderly, she puts her arm about his waist.
You know me, Prophet. Your battered heart, bleeding life in the universe of wounds.
The angel presses the book against Pryor's chest, then presses her body against his. Together, they experience something unnameable, painful, joyful, in equal measure.
In your blood we write stasis. The end.
She releases Pryor, who sinks to the floor. Holding the book aloft, the angel ascends. Scene 3. The bedroom disappears. While this is happening, Pryor stands and again, with deliberate, unhurried pace, changes into his street clothes. When he's ready, he resumes his place beside Belize, who's waiting, thinking, on the street in front of the funeral home.
Well, what do you want me to say?
It's nuts.
It's worse than nuts. It's, well, don't migrate. Don't mangle. That's, well, kind of malevolent, isn't it? You know, some of us didn't exactly choose to migrate. Know what I'm saying? Some
offended.
Of us. But it is offensive, or at least monumentally confused.
It was visited on.
Visited, Pryor. By who? It is from you. What else is it?
Something else.
Well, that's crazy.
Then I'm crazy.
No, you were not crazy.
Then it was an angel.
It was not an angel.
Then I'm crazy. The whole world is. Why not me? It's 1986 and there's a plague. Friends younger than me are dead. And I'm only 30. And every goddamn morning I wake up and I think Lewis is next to me in the bed. And it takes me long minutes to remember that this is real. It isn't just an impossible, terrible dream, so maybe, yes, I'm flipping out.
Stop. This is not dementia, and this is not real. This is just you, Pryor, afraid of... afraid of what's coming, afraid of time. But see, this is not how it goes. The world doesn't spin backwards. No, listen, listen to the world. How fast it goes. That's New York traffic. Baby? That's the sound of energy, the sound of time. And even if you were hurting it, it can't go back. You better fucking not flip out, you hear me? There is no angel. Hear me? For me?
Whisper into the ear of the world, prophet.
I can handle anything but not this happening
Watch
to you.
Watch up red in the tide of its dreams and billow bloody words into the sky of sleep.
I'm sorry, baby. I've tried, really, but... I can't. It follows me. It won't let me go. So maybe I'm a prophet. Not me alone. All of us, the ones who are dying now. Maybe the virus is the prophecy? Be still. Maybe the world has driven God from heaven because I do believe that... Over and over, I have seen the end of things, and having seen, I'm going blind, as prophets do, right? No, it makes a certain sense to me.
For this age of enemy, a new law.
Oh, God! How I hate heaven!
Delivered this night, this silence. From heaven, O prophet, to you.
But I've got no resistance left.
Pryor kisses Belize goodbye.
Except to run.
Pryor.
He limps away. Belize watches him go. Act 3. Borborygmi. The squirming facts exceed the squamous mind. January 1986. Scene 1. Morning, several days after the end of Act 2. Joe and Lewis in Lewis's apartment, which is tidier, homier. Lewis is in bed, in his underwear. Joe is standing, dress shirt in hand, wearing only his temple garment.
A Mormon? You're a Mormon?
Yes.
Yeah, but not like a practicing Mormon. You were a Mormon once, but now you're...
I'm a Mormon. Always have been, always...
But you're a lawyer. A serious lawyer.
The chief clerk of the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court is a Mormon, Lewis.
Jesus, what's Mormons everywhere? It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I don't like cults.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is not a cult.
Any religion that is not at least 2,000 years old is a cult. And I know people who would call that generous. So what, that fruity underwear you wear, that's what?
I've been putting this on in front of you for 3 weeks. Why are you asking about it now? It's a temple garment.
Oh my God, what's it for?
Protection. A second skin. I can stop wearing it if you...
How can you stop wearing it if it's a skin? Your past, your beliefs, your...
I know how you feel. I keep expecting divine retribution for this, but these 3 weeks with you, I'm actually happy, actually.
What, you're not happy? That's ridiculous. No one is happy. God, what am I doing with you? I mean, with anyone. I should be exterminated. But with you... I mean, politically, and, you know, and you're probably bisexual, and, you know, and I mean, I really like you a lot, but...
Lewis heads into the bathroom.
You unsettle me. You know, I have tried not to think about anything. Try to just, you know, enjoy the moral free fall, but it's hard. You know, so I guess that's why I finally noticed that every night before we fuck, you step out of those... A temple garment. I have to pee and brush my teeth.
As soon as Lewis enters the bathroom, Harper comes out of it, wearing a flower print cotton dress, her hair neatly brushed. Joe is startled.
What are you?
You're in love with him.
I am?
I mean,
don't
you
ask me. Are you?
Abandoned your wife, and that's terrible, but you're so decent and kind and truly sweet in bed, and I don't see how that's possible, but with you, it seems to be. And that
how?
Is, like, blurring some sort of
how
essential distinction
huh.
between intention and...
Maybe you're not in love with him. If you were, you wouldn't ask me that. You'd know.
Are you... Is my mother...
We're living together.
Is that...
You can imagine. Or no, probably you can't.
Why are you here?
I have terrible powers. Maybe I'm a witch.
You're not a...
I could be a witch. Why not? I married a fairy.
Lewis comes out, brushing his teeth.
Anything's possible. Any awful thing.
Is there some capacity you fostered within yourself for straddling cognitive dissonance? Like, I mean, you're a Republican, which means you choose to affiliate yourself with a political party that's half theocrats and half eco-anarchist libertarians, you know, and yet your head doesn't split open from the sheer strain of the whole... Oh, hang on a sec.
He goes back into the bathroom.
Leave, Harper.
I knew you'd be with someone. You'd think of yourself as so lonely all the time, but you've never been alone.
Oh, that isn't... You don't know. I have felt very alone.
Lewis comes out of the bathroom.
Till now.
She disappears. Lewis stares at Joe.
You make no sense to me.
I understand you.
You think? I'm impressed. It's just... It's a lot. You know, it's a lot.
You could ask me questions about myself. You haven't asked much. You could risk that.
I have to risk what?
Find me. I'd like you to. I mean, find out who I am.
Well, you're right.
About?
Well, it is. Like you say, it's risky.
Scene 2. Same day. Roy in his hospital room. Near his bed, there's a mini-fridge with a locked door. He looks worse than before. Gaunt. Gray. The pain in his gut is now constant, and it's getting worse. He's on the phone, a more elaborate model than the one in the previous scene. This phone has buttons.
No records, no records. What are you, deaf? I said I have no records for this shitty little committee. It's not how I work.
He has a severe abdominal spasm. He holds the phone away, grimaces terribly, curls up into a ball and then uncurls, making no sound, determined that the party on the line won't hear how much pain he's in. Ethel Rosenberg appears in her hat and coat. Roy sees her enter. He watches her walk to a chair and sit. He resumes his phone call, never taking his eyes off Ethel, who stares at him, silent, unreadable.
Those notes were lost. Lost! In a fire, water damage. I can't do this any...
Belize enters with a pill tray.
I threw up 15 times today. I counted. What are you looking at? 15 times, yeah?
Hang up the phone. I have to watch you take
the
these...
The limo thing? Oh, for the love of Christ, I was acquitted twice for that. They're trying to kill me dead with this harassment. I have done things in my life, but I never killed anyone. Present company accepted. And you deserved it. Get the fuck out of here. Stall. It can't start tomorrow if we don't show, so don't show. I'll pay the old Harrod and back. I have to have...
Put down the phone.
Suck my dick, Mother Teresa. This is life or death.
Put down the...
Roy grabs the pill cup off the tray and throws the pills on the floor. Belize reaches for the phone. Roy slams down the receiver and snatches the phone away, protecting it, cradling it.
You touch this phone and I'll bite. And I got rabies. And from now on, I supply my own pills. I already told them to push their juju bees to the losers down the hall.
Your own pills?
No, double blind. A little bird warned me. The vultures are... Jesus, God, these cramps! Now I know why women go berserk once... Fuck! Oh, good, I made a laugh. I don't trust this hospital. For all I know, Lillian fucking Hellman is down in the basement switching the pills around. No, wait. She's dead, isn't she? Oh, boy. Memory. Hey, Ethel, didn't Lillian die? Did you see her up there? Ugly. Ugly broad. Nose like even a Jew should worry, men, upon him like that. You seen somebody fitting that description up there in red heaven? Huh? Huh? She won't talk to me. She thinks she's some sort of a death watch or something.
Who are you talking to?
Roy looks at Ethel, realizing, remembering that Belize can't see her.
I'm self-medicating.
With what?
Acid something.
Azetothamidine.
Gesundheit.
Roy retrieves a key on a ring from under his pillow and tosses it to Belize.
AZT, you got...
Belize unlocks the icebox. It's full of bottles of pills.
100 proof. Elixir vitae. Give me the key.
You scored.
Impressively.
Lifetime supply. There are maybe 30 people in the whole country getting this drug.
Now there are 31.
There are 100,000 people who need it. Look at you. The dragon atop the golden horde. It's not fair, is it?
No, but as Jimmy Carter said, neither is life. And then we shipped him back to his peanut plantation. Put your brown eyes back in your goddamn head, baby. It's the history of the world. I didn't write it, though I flatter myself I am a footnote, and you are a nurse, so minister and skedaddle.
If you live 50 more years, you won't swallow all these pills. I want some.
That's illegal.
10 bottles.
I'm gonna report you.
There's a nursing shortage. I'm in a union. I'm real scared. I have friends who need them.
Loyalty, I admire, but no.
Why?
Because you repulse me. Why? You'll be begging for it next. Why? Because I hate your guts and your friend's guts. That's why. Gimme! So goddamned entitled. Such a shock when the bill comes due.
From what I read, you never paid a fucking bill in your life.
No one has worked harder than me to end up knocked flat in a...
Yeah, well, things are tough all over.
And you come here looking for fairness? They couldn't touch me when I was alive, and now when I'm dying, they try this.
He grabs up all the paperwork in two fists.
Now, when I'm a... that's fair? What am I? A dead man? Fuck! What was I saying? Oh, God, I can't remember any... Oh, yeah. Dead. I'm a goddamn dead man.
You expect pity?
I expect you to hand over that key and move your nigger ass out of my room.
What did you just say?
Move your nigger, cunt, spade,
shit for brains,
faggot,
filthy mouth,
ass,
selfish,
out of
motherfucking
my room.
Cowardly, cock-sucking, cloven hoop,
slave, ape,
cake!
Now you're talking!
You greedy cake!
Now you can have a bottle. But only one.
Belize tosses the key at Roy, hard. Roy catches it. Belize takes a bottle of the pills, then another, then a third, and then leaves. As soon as Belize is out of the room, Roy is spasmed with pain he's been holding in.
Ah! Ah! Oh, God! Ah! I thought he'd never go. Ah. So what, are you gonna sit there all night?
Till morning.
Uh-huh. The cock crows. You go back to the swamp?
No. I take the 705 to Yonkers.
What the fuck's in Yonkers?
The disbarment committee hearings. You've been hawking about it all week. I'll have a look-see.
They won't let you in the front door. You're a convicted and executed traitor.
I'll walk through a wall.
Fucking succubus! Fucking blood-sucking old bat!
Roy picks up the phone, punches a couple of buttons, and then stops dialing, his laughter gone. He stares at the phone, dejectedly, not noticing that Ethel has vanished. Roy puts the receiver back in its cradle and puts the phone aside. He turns to the empty chair where Ethel had been sitting. He talks to the chair as if she's sitting in it.
The worst thing about being sick in America, Ethel, is you are booted out of the parade. Americans have no use for sick. Look at Reagan. He's so healthy, he's hardly human. He's 100 if he's a day. He takes a slug in his chest, and 2 days later he's out west riding ponies in his PJs. I mean, who does that? That's America. It's just no country for the infirm.
Scene 3. Same day. The diorama room of the Mormon Visitors Center. The room's a small proscenium theater. The diorama is hidden behind closed red velvet curtains. There are plush red theater seats for the audience, and Harper is slouched in one of them, dressed as she was in her previous scene. Empty potato chip and M&M bags and cans of soda are scattered around her seat. She stares with dull anger at the drawn stage curtains. She's been here a long time. Hannah enters with Pryor, dressed in his prophet garb.
This is the diorama room. I thought we agreed that you weren't. I'll go see if I can get it started.
She exits. Pryor sits. He removes his scarf and dark glasses. He wipes his face, startlingly pale and clammy with sweat, with the scarf. He breathes in and out, feeling tightness in his lungs. Harper watches this with a level stare and a flat affect. Jaded, ironic disaffection she self-protectively, experimentally assumed. The lights in the room dim.
Welcome to the Mormon Visitor Center Diorama Room. In a moment, our show will begin. We hope it will have a special message for you. Please refrain from smoking, and food and drink are not allowed. Welcome to the Mormon Visitor Center Diorama Room. In a moment, our show will begin.
We hope it will have a special message for you.
They're having trouble with the machinery.
She rips open a bag of M&Ms and offers them to Pryor.
No, thanks. You're not supposed to eat in the...
I can. I live here. Have we met before?
No, I don't think so. You live here?
There's a dummy family in the diorama. You'll see when the curtain opens. The main dummy, the Big Daddy dummy, looks like my husband Joe. When they push the buttons, he'll start to talk. You can't believe a word he says, but the sound of him is reassuring. It's an incredible resemblance.
Huh. Are you a Mormon?
Jack Mormon.
I beg your pardon?
Jack Mormon? It means I'm flawed. Inferior Mormon product. Probably comes from Jack Rabbit, you know? I ran.
Do you believe in angels? In the angel Mormon?
Moroni, not Mormon. The angel Moroni. Ask my mother-in-law when you leave, the scary lady at the reception desk, if its name was Moroni, then why don't they call themselves morons? It's from comments like that, you can tell I'm Jack. You're not a Mormon.
No, no.
Just distracted with grief.
I'm not. No, I was just walking. And
we get a lot of distracted, grief-stricken people here. It's our specialty.
I'm not... distracted. I'm doing research.
On Mormons?
On angels. I'm an angelologist.
I've never met an angelologist before.
It's an obscure discipline.
I can imagine. Angelology. Fieldwork must be rigorous. You'd have to drop dead before you saw your first specimen.
One. I saw one. An angel. It crashed through my bedroom ceiling.
Huh. That sort of thing always happens to me.
I have a fever. I should be in bed, but I'm too anxious to lie in bed. You look very familiar.
So do you, but it's just not possible. I don't get out. I've only ever been here, or someplace a lot like this, alone in the dark, waiting for the dummy.
Lights come up to reveal a brightly painted, brightly lit backdrop of the desert between Colorado and Utah, mountains looming in the distance. Posed before the backdrop, in silhouette, a family of Mormon pioneers, seated in a covered wagon.
In 1847, across 1,500 miles of frontier wilderness, braving mountain blizzards, desert storms, and renegade Indians, the first Mormon wagon trains made their difficult way towards the kingdom of God.
Harper noisily rips open a bag of nacho-flavored Doritos, which she holds out to Pryor.
You want some nacho flavor?
She stops as, to the accompaniment of the sounds of a wagon train and the Largo from Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, stage lights illuminate the Mormon family of costumed mannequins. Two young sons, a mother and a daughter, and driving the wagon, a father who looks a lot like Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Father, I am afeard.
Hush, Caleb.
The wilderness is so vast.
Oren, Caleb, hush. Be brave for your mother and your little sister.
They don't have any lines, the mother and the sister, and only his face moves. That's not really fair.
We want to be brave and strong like you.
When will we arrive in Zion, Father?
Never. You'll die of snake bite, and your brother looks like scorpion food to me.
All this wandering.
Soon, boys, soon. Just like the prophet promised, the Lord leads the way.
Will there be lots to eat there, Father? Will the desert flow with milk and honey?
Nope, just sand.
Will there be water?
Oh, there's a big lake, but it's salt.
He always
joke. He'll drag you on your knees through hell, and when you get there, the water, of course, is undrinkable.
Sometimes he tests us, son.
It's a promised land, but what a disappointing promise.
Read to us, Father. Read us the story.
Again?
Yes.
The story about the prophet.
Well, boys, well. 1823. The prophet, who was a strapping lad like everyone else in his time, was seeking God. There were many churches, disputatious enough, but who was right? Could only be one true church. All else, darkness.
Lewis suddenly appears in the diorama.
Okay, yeah, but then answer me this. How do adherents of a religion that presupposes theocracy ever function participatorily in a pluralist, secular democracy?
I can't talk about this now.
You're what? You're busy?
I'm working.
Don't you... I'm sorry. It seems to me that your faith demands that you reject the whole basis of... of democratic compromise. And
it doesn't,
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And I really can't discuss this with you here. I have to finish proofing
this.
But, like, I'm sorry, him?
Delirious. I must be delirious.
Alarm.
What is he doing in there?
Joe gets down from the wagon and goes to Lewis.
Who, the little creep? He's in and out every day. I hate him. He's got absolutely nothing to do with the story.
What am I doing here? With you.
Can you turn it off? I'm leaving. I can't.
Pryor starts to leave, but the pain in his leg stops him. In the diorama, Joe kisses Lewis. Pryor, seeing this, calls out,
Lewis!
Lewis pulls away from Joe.
Did you?
What?
I thought I heard. Fuck work! We have to talk!
Lewis exits. Joe hesitates, looking back at the wagon, then follows Lewis out.
Oh, the dummy never left with the little creep. He never left before. When they come in and see he's gone, they'll blame me.
Harper rushes to the diorama stage and pulls its curtains closed. She turns back and sees that Pryor is crying.
You shouldn't do that in here. This isn't a place for real feelings. This is just story time here. Stop.
I just saw my lover, my ex-lover, with your husband, with that window display Ken doll in that thing. I saw him.
Okay, don't have a hissy fit. I told you it wasn't working right. It's just the magic of the theater or something. Listen, if you see the little creep, you tell him to bring Joe, to bring the mannequin back. They'll evict me, and this is it. It may look like nothing, but it is the last place on earth for me. I can't go sit in Brooklyn.
Hannah enters with a flashlight.
What on earth is going... What did you do to him?
Nothing. He just can't adjust, is all. He just...
Hannah goes to the diorama.
No, wait, don't...
Hannah yanks the curtain open. The father dummy is back. A real dummy this time.
Oh, look, we imagined it.
This is a favor. They let me work here as a favor, but you keep making scenes and look at this mess. It's a garbage scow.
It doesn't look so much like him now.
Are you just going to sit here forever, trash piling higher day after day till... Well, to
what? You sound just like him.
If I could get him to come back.
You'd even grind your teeth in your sleep like
him. If he'd return my phone calls, if he'd stop hiding, I would go back to Salt Lake tomorrow.
You can't go back to Salt Lake. You sold your house.
But I know my duty when I see it, and if you and Joe could say the same,
we would... Her son calls to tell her he's a homo, and what does she do? She sells her house, and she calls me crazy. You have even less of a place in the world than I do, if that's possible.
Am I dreaming this? I don't understand.
He saw an angel.
That's his business.
He's an angelologist.
Well, don't go blabbing about it.
If you aren't serious, you shouldn't come in here.
Either that or he's nuts.
It's a visitor's center. I'm visiting.
He has a point.
Quiet. It's for serious visitors. It's a serious religion.
Do they, like, pay you to do this?
She volunteers.
Because you're not very hospitable. I did see an angel.
And what do you want me to do about it? I have problems of my own. The diorama is closed for repairs. You have to leave. Clean up this mess.
Oh, I never imagined losing my mind was going to be such hard work.
Oh, it is. Threshold of revelation.
Oh.
Oh, you don't look well. You really should be at home in bed.
I'll die there.
Well, better in bed than on the streets. Just ask anyone. Goodbye. Please. Till we meet again.
Pryor leaves.
Bitter lady of the plains, talk to me. Tell me what to do.
The Mormon mother turns to Harper, then stands and leaves the diorama stage. She gestures with her head for Harper to follow her. Harper goes to the diorama, gets in the Mormon mother's seat.
Look at us. So perfect in place. The desert, the mountains, the previous century. Maybe I could have believed in you then. Maybe we should never have moved east.
I'm stuck. My heart's an anchor.
Leave it then. Can't carry no extra weight.
The Mormon mother leaves the diorama room. Harper looks around at the theater seat she's occupied for days now with its surrounding trash. She follows the Mormon mother. Scene 4. Late that afternoon. Split scene. Joe and Lewis at Jones Beach, and later, Pryor in his apartment and Lewis at a Brooklyn payphone. Joe and Lewis are sitting shoulder to shoulder in the dunes, facing the ocean. It's cold. The sound of waves and gulls and distant Belt Parkway traffic. New York romantic. Joe is very cold. Lewis, as always, is oblivious to the weather.
The winter Atlantic. Wow. Huh? Oh, there used to be guys in the dunes even when it snowed. Nothing deterred us from the task at hand.
Which was?
Exploration. Across an unmapped terrain, the body of the homosexual human male. You know, here, or the Rambo, or the Scrub Pines on Fire Island, or the St. Mark's Baths, hardy pioneers. Like your ancestors.
Not exactly.
And many have perished on the trail. I fucked around a lot more than he did. No justice.
I love it when you get to places and see what it used to be. The whole country was like this once. A paradise.
Ruined now.
It's still a great country. Best place on earth. Best place to be.
Oi, a Mormon. I can't believe I spent 3 weeks in bed with
Joe puts his hand over Lewis's mouth.
You never asked.
So, like, this is kind of hot.
Shut up, okay?
Lewis nods. Joe takes his hand off Lewis's mouth and, after looking around, kisses him deeply.
You know why you find the world so unsatisfying?
Lewis shakes his head no.
Because you believe it's perfectible.
No,
You tell yourself you don't, but you do. You cling to fantasies of perfection and kindliness, and you never face the sorrow of the world, its bitterness. The parts of it that are bitter.
Huh.
You have to reconcile yourself to the world's unperfectibility.
Reconcile. And how do you do that?
Joe kisses Lewis again, begins to unbutton Lewis's shirt.
By being thoroughly in the world, but not of it.
You mean like an Emersonian kind of thing? I don't see how that's workable, practical, given, you know, emotions and... Oh my God, oh my God.
You have to accept that we're not put here to make the entire earth into a heaven. You have to accept we can't. And accept as rightfully yours the happiness that comes your way.
But, rightfully, that is so Republican. You know, it's bite my nipple again.
Joe does. Louis responds. Joe starts to unzip Louis's pants. Louis stops him.
No, wait. No, fuck. I am, like, lost in an ideological leather bar with you. Okay, I want my clarity back. What little I ever possessed, it's been stolen by... Oh, I mean, I wish you weren't so...
Republican?
Oh, so fucking gorgeous. And Republican, although if you were gorgeous and your politics didn't horrifically suck, I'd really be in trouble here. So, you know, I guess for saving me from myself, I should thank Ronald Reagan. Even though, you know, he is responsible for everything bad and evil in the world.
If people like you didn't have President Reagan to demonize, where would you be?
Well, if he didn't have people like me to demonize, where would he be? Upper right-hand square on the Hollywood squares.
I'm not your enemy, Louis.
I never said you were...
Fundamentally, we both want the same thing.
Louis nods his head yes.
I don't think that's true.
It is. What you did when you walked out on him, that was very hard to do that. The world may not understand it or approve, but you did what you needed to do. And I consider you very brave.
Nobody does what I did, Joe. Nobody.
But maybe many want to. Louis, I may be falling in.
No, you're not.
Don't laugh at... Don't say that. I am. I'm...
You're not. Quiet. You can't be. It's only been 2 weeks.
Three, actually.
You know,
and what difference does that... I've never felt so...
Feel like that, love.
So happy to,
love.
So hungry for
God,
anyone
love.
Before. It's like all the time I...
Thing as... you think you do, but that's just the gay virgin thing. That's
you
that
and
is.
I, Louis... We're the same. We are. We both want the same thing. We both want each...
I want to see Pryor again.
Joe freezes, then turns away.
I miss him.
You want to go back to...
I just... need to see him again. That, don't you? You... Come on, you must want to see your wife.
But I want more to be with you.
I have to see him. That... Please, please, don't look so sad. Do you understand what I...
You don't want to see me anymore.
I...
Louis. Anything.
What?
Anything. Whatever you want. I can give up anything. My skin.
Joe starts to remove his clothes. When he realizes what Joe is doing, Louis tries to stop him.
What are you doing? Someone will see us. It's not a nude beach. It's freezing. And Joe, oh my God.
Joe pushes Louis away. Louis falls. And Joe removes the rest of his clothing, tearing the temple garment off. He's naked.
I'm flayed. No past now. I could give up anything. Maybe in what we've been doing, maybe I'm even infected.
No, you're...
I'm so afraid of that, really. I'm scared because I don't want to be sick. I want to live now, maybe for the first time ever. And I can be anything. Anything I need to be. And I want to be with you.
Louis starts to gather up Joe's clothes and dress him.
You have a good heart. And you think the good thing is to be guilty and kind always, but it's not always kind to be gentle and soft. There's a genuine violence, softness, and weakness visit on people. You ought to think about that.
I will think about it.
You ought to think about...
Yeah, I will.
About what you're doing to me. No. I mean...
I'm sorry, I will.
What you need.
Think about what you need. I tried to warn you that...
Be brave.
Louis starts to walk away from Joe.
And then you'll come back to me.
Louis turns back to Joe, then turns again and leaves the beach. Joe starts to dress himself, then sinks to his knees in the sand. Pryor returns home to his apartment. He unwraps his layers of black prophet clothes. He is sweating heavily and feels very sick. He goes to the sink, runs water, splashes a little on his face, shudders. Joe, on the beach, looks up and yells.
You have to come back to me!
Joe remains, kneeling in the sand, trying to collect himself, unable to move. Scene 5. Harper and the Mormon mother are near the pedestrian entrance ramp on the Manhattan side of the Brooklyn Bridge. The Mormon mother looks up at the bridge, unable to hide completely a sense of awe.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Like a harp. On the other side is Brooklyn. Was it a hard thing crossing the prairies?
You ain't stupid, so don't ask stupid. Ask me something for real.
In your experience of the world, how do people change?
Well, it has something to do with God, so it's not very nice. God splits the skin with a jagged thumbnail from throat to belly, then plunges a huge, filthy hand in. He grabs hold of your bloody tubes, and they slip to evade his grasp, but he squeezes hard. He insists. Then he pulls and pulls till all your innards are yanked out in the pain. Can't even talk about that. Then he stuffs them back, dirty, tangled, and torn. It's up to you to do the stitching.
And then get up and walk around.
Just mangled guts pretending.
That's how people change.
Act 4. John Brown's Body. January 1986. Scene 1. 2 days later. Roy and Joe in Roy's hospital room. Roy's in a big hospital chair, the kind that makes it possible for very sick people to sit upright briefly. The tube of an IV drip bag, hanging from a portable drip stand, runs into a vein in his arm. He is shockingly altered, in terrible shape. He wears a flimsy hospital bathrobe. Under that, a backless hospital Johnny gown, and under that, adult diapers. His legs are bare, fish belly white, and there are disposable hospital slippers on his feet. He forces himself to speak as normally as he can, using energy he doesn't have, to focus and stay connected. Joe sits in an ordinary chair facing Roy.
If you want the smoke and puffery, you can listen to Kissinger and Schultz and those guys. But if you want to look at the heart of modern conservatism, you look at me. Everyone else has abandoned the struggle. Everything nowadays is just sipping tea with Nixon and Mao. That was disgusting. Did you see that? Were you born yet?
Of course.
My generation, we had clarity, unafraid to look deep into the miasma at the heart of the world. What a pit. What a nightmare is there. I have looked. I have searched all my life for absolute bottom, and I found it, believe me, Stygian. How tragic, how brutal life is, how false people are. The immutable heart of what we are that bleeds through whatever we might become. All else is vanity. I don't know the world anymore. After I die, they'll say it was for the money and the headlines. But it was never the money. It's the moxie that counts. I never wavered. You, remember.
I will, Roy. I left my wife. I needed to tell you.
It happens.
I've been staying with someone else.
It happens.
I was afraid you wouldn't want to see me. If you'd forgive me for letting you down.
I forgive you. But I don't forget. Or I forget, but I don't forgive. I can't remember which. What is it? You seen a lady around here? Dumpy lady. Stupid. Hat. She. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. No. She's off watching the hearings. Treacherous bitch.
Who?
Did you get a blessing from your father before he died?
A blessing?
Yeah.
No.
Ah, he should have done that. Life. That's what they're supposed to bless. Life.
Roy motions for Joe to come over, then for him to kneel. Joe hesitates, then kneels. Roy puts his hand on Joe's forehead. Joe leans the weight of his head into Roy's hand. They both close their eyes and enjoy it for a moment.
Roy, I need to talk to you about...
Shh, Schmendrick, don't fuck up the magic. Brucha, you don't even have to trick it out of me, like what's his name in the Bible?
Jacob.
That's the one. A ruthless motherfucker. Some bald runt, but he laid hold of his birthright with his claws and his teeth. Jacob's father, what was the guy's name?
Isaac.
Yeah, the sacrifice. That jerk. My mother read me those stories. See the scar on my nose? When I was 3 months old, there was a bony spur. She made them operate. Shave it off. They said I was too young for surgery. I'd outgrow it. But she insisted. I figured she wanted to toughen me up. And it worked. I am tough. It's taking a lot to dismantle me. Now you have to go.
Okay, But the person I'm staying with, it's not a... It's a man.
A man?
Yes.
You're with a man?
Yes, I... Yes, I guess I am. Yes. It's someone I met recently. For 3 weeks now, actually, although I don't know if he wants to, continue what, and I'm going kind of crazy a little, I don't know what I'll do if he, I guess this is a surprise to you that I hope this is okay. There's no one I can talk to about it. I never wanted to talk about this, but now I'm going pillar to post looking for, oh, Lord, I don't know. Sympathy, I suppose. Which I never used to need, which I never wanted, never allowed, or even, felt for myself. I always found the whole idea of it just contemptible, just repulsive.
Yeah.
And I know how preposterous this is coming at you with this, but you... I know you care for me. I know that, and I'm so...
Roy starts to stand up.
I gotta.
You, I'm sorry, what, the, bathroom, or...
Roy walks unsteadily. The IV tube in his arm extends to its full length and then pulls. Roy looks down at it, remembering it's there. In a calm, disinterested manner, he pulls it out of his arm, which starts bleeding profusely.
Ow.
Roy, what are you?
Joe starts for the door. Roy stands still, watching dark blood run down his arm.
Help, please. I think he's...
Belize enters with the portable oxygen and then sees Roy.
Holy shit!
Belize puts on rubber gloves, starts toward Roy.
Get the fuck away from me.
Roy, please get back
into... Shut up. Now you listen to me.
Get your ass back in
the... Shut up, I said. I want you home with your wife. Whatever else you got going, cut it then.
I can't, Roy. I need to be with him. I need to. I'm...
Roy grabs Joe by the shirt, smearing it with blood.
You need? Listen to me. You do what I say, or you will regret it.
Roy lets go of Joe's shirt, turning from him, disoriented, looking for the bed.
And don't talk to me about it ever again.
Belize moves in, takes Roy to the bed, and begins bandaging the punctured arm.
I never saw that coming. You killed me.
Get somewhere you can take off that shirt and throw it out, and don't touch the blood.
Why? I don't understand.
Out! You already got my blessing. What more do you want from me?
Get the fuck out of here.
Please wait. Let me just wait till...
Till what? You what? You want to stay and watch this? Well, fuck you two.
Joe leaves. Belize finishes bandaging Roy's arm. Both of them silent for as long as this takes. When he's finished with the arm, Belize straightens up a little. Roy looks blankly at the bandage. Then...
Every goddamn thing I ever wanted, they have taken from me. Mocked and reviled all my life.
Join the club.
I don't belong to any club. You could get through the front door up. You watch yourself. You take too many liberties. What's your name?
Norman Arriaga. Belize to my friends. But you can call me Norman Arriaga.
Tell me something, Norman. You ever hire a lawyer?
No, Roy. Never did.
Hire a lawyer. Sue somebody. It's good for the soul. Lawyers are the high priests of America. We alone know the words that made America out of thin air. We alone know how to use the words. The law. The only club I ever wanted to belong to. And before they take that from me, I'm gonna die! Die!
Roy has a series of awful spasms, the worst so far. They shake him violently. Roy grabs Belize by both arms. Belize tries to control Roy's body as he convulses in horrible pain. Roy hangs on to Belize. They're in a tight, desperate embrace, both shaken by Roy's agonized spasm. During the seizure, Ethel appears.
Fire! Out!
The pain, subsiding a little, Roy forces the convulsions to abate. Through the remainder of the scene, with grim effort, conserving his resources, he just manages to keep his body under his control.
God have mercy. This is a lousy...